At this moment, the reinforcements we've sent to Baghdad are having an impact. They're making a difference. And as more of those reinforcements arrive in the months ahead, their impact will continue to grow. To succeed in their mission, our troops need Congress to provide the resources, funds, and equipment they need to fight our enemies. It has now been 57 days since I have requested that Congress pass emergency funds for our troops. Instead of passing clean bills that fund our troops on the front lines, the House and Senate have spent this time debating bills that undercut the troops by substituting the judgment of politicians in Washington for the judgment of our commanders on the ground, setting an arbitrary deadline for withdrawal from Iraq, spending billions of dollars on pork barrel projects completely unrelated to the war. I made it clear for weeks that if either the House or Senate version of this bill comes to my desk, I will veto it. And it is also clear from the strong support for this position in both houses that the veto would be sustained. Only way the Democrats were able to pass their bill in the first place was to load the bill with pork and other spending that has nothing to do with the war. Still, the Democrats in Congress continue to pursue their bills. Now they have left Washington for spring recess without finishing the work. Democrat leaders in Congress seem more interested in fighting political battles in Washington than providing our troops what they need to fight the battles in Iraq. Democrat leaders in Congress are bent on making a political statement. Then they need to send me this unacceptable bill as quickly as possible when they come back. I'll veto it. And then Congress can get down to business of funding our troops without strings and without delay. Congress fails to act in the next few weeks, it will have significant consequences for our men, women, and armed forces. If Congress fails to pass a bill I can sign by mid-April, the Army will be forced to consider cutting back on equipment and quality of life initiatives for our Guard and Reserve forces. These cuts would be necessary because the money will have to be shifted to support the troops on the front lines. The Army also would be forced to consider curtailing some training for Guard and Reserve units here at home. This would reduce their readiness and could delay their availability to mobilize for missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, reducing the availability of these forces to deploy overseas. If this happens, some of the forces now deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq may need to be extended because other units are not ready to take their places. Preventing us from getting those troops is the pool of forces that are available to deploy. These new teams aren't available, but we have to ask other units to extend in the field. We'll be forced to take increasingly draconian measures which will impact Army readiness and impose hardships on our soldiers and their families. Time of war is irresponsible for Democratic leadership in Congress to delay for months on end while our troops in combat are waiting for the funds. Bottom line is this. Congress's failure to fund our troops on the front lines will mean that some of our military families could wait longer for their loved ones to return from the front lines, and others could see their loved ones headed back to the war sooner than they need to. Congress's most basic responsibility is to give our troops the equipment and training they need to fight our enemies and protect our nation. They're now failing in that responsibility, and if they do not change course in the coming weeks, the price of that failure will be paid by our troops and their loved ones. There are a group of people that don't think we should be there in the first place. There are some who don't believe that this strategy will work. This is precisely the debate we had inside the White House. Can we succeed? I know there are some who have basically said it is impossible to succeed. I believe not only can we succeed, I know we must succeed. So I decided to send reinforcements as opposed to leaving Baghdad and watching the country go up in flames. I chose a different route, which is to send more troops into Baghdad. The whole strategy is to give the extremists, whether they be Shia or Sunni extremists, to have safe haven from which to plot attacks on America, which could provide new resources for an enemy that wants to harm us. There's only 40% of our troops that are there on the ground. That's why I find it somewhat astounding that people in Congress would start calling for withdrawal even before all the troops have made it to Baghdad. And what makes Iraq different from previous struggles is that September the 11th showed that chaos in another part of the world and or safe haven for killers, for radicals, affects the security of the United States. You know, I'm not going to talk about any intelligence that I've seen one way or the other, but their government is making some choices that will continue to isolate them and deprive them of, you know, a better economic future. So you take the issue very seriously. There's two reasons. One is for national security concerns, and two is for environmental concerns. And I hope that we can get this done. I'll let the Congress get out of the Congress through my desk as quickly as possible. I think voters in America want Congress to support our troops in harm's way. They want money to the troops. And they don't want politicians in Washington telling our generals how to fight a war. One thing to object to the policy, but it's another thing when you have troops in harm's way not to give you the funds they need. And no question there's been a political dance going on here in Washington. You follow this closely, you know what I'm talking about. But they then had to bring out a new funding stream in order to attract votes to an emergency war supplemental. Congress shouldn't tell generals how to run the war. Congress should not shortchange our military. So my attitude is, enough politics. They need to come back, pass a bill. If they want to play politics, fine. They continue to do that. I will veto it, but they ought to do it quickly. They ought to get the bill to my desk as quickly as possible, and I'll veto it. And then we can get out of the business of funding our troops without strings and without withdrawal dates. And they need to come off their vacation, get a bill to my desk. And if it's got strings and mandates and withdrawals and pork, I'll veto it, and then we can get down to business of getting this thing done. And we can do it quickly. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. And we get the bill, get the troops funded, and we go about our business of winning this war. And secondly, we're taking some time to fully understand the details of the decision. You know, this decision was focused on, I do believe the don't ask, don't tell policy is good policy. I just disagree with their decisions. It sends mixed signals, bad signals to, and rightly so, sends different kinds of signals. Whatever option they choose, I hope they get home, get a bill, and get it to my desk. And if it's artificial timetables of withdrawal, if it cuts off funding for troops, or if it tells our generals how to run a war, I'll veto it. And then we can get about the business of getting our troops what they need, what our generals want to have, by reinforcing troops in Iraq. People don't think we can succeed. You know, in other words, there's no chance of succeeding. That's a part of the debate. But what people also have got to understand is what would happen if we fail. And the way you fail is to leave before the job is done. We would just abandon this young democracy. Say we're tired. And we'll withdraw from Baghdad. Hope there's not chaos. I believe that if this capital city were to fall into chaos, and the reason why is so that the country has a chance to become a dangerous part of the world. People that have been, that can't stand America to find new ways to recruit. There would be potentially additional resources for them to use at their disposal. I told the American people often it is best to defeat them there so we don't have to face them here, fully recognizing that what happens over there can affect the security here. That's one of the major lessons of September the 11th. In that case, was safe haven found in a failed state, where killers plotted and planned and trained, and came and killed 3,000 of our citizens. And there are some who, I guess, say that's impossible to happen in the Middle East. I strongly disagree. If these killers were able to find safe haven with the plot, plan, and attack, they would do so since September the 11th. And I believe, whether it be in Afghanistan or in Iraq, or anywhere else, if these enemies are able to find safe haven, Iraq is a very important part of securing the homeland, and it's a very important part of helping change the Middle East into a part of the world that will not serve as a threat to the civilized world, to the developed world, the people like in the United States. So thank you all very much for your interest. Appreciate it.